What's up, ladies and gentlemen? You're listening to the E4L podcast. This is episode number 7. It's a Wednesday, June 13th. A week from today, Trump will be in Duluth. Hopefully I'll get to see him. It's also his 72nd birthday tomorrow. So happy early birthday to our president. And today we got a special guest. I'll kick it over to Tyler and I'll reveal who that is.
Welcome to the show, everyone. We have a little bit different structure today. Usually we cover the crazy liberal hypocrisies of the week first. Today we're definitely going to talk about the Trump-Kim summit and the liberal reaction to that, which is absolutely mind-blowing. But first, let me introduce our guest, C.J. Pearson. He is a 15-year-old who Senator Rand Paul described as a remarkable young man who understands the importance of standing up for liberty. He's a breath of fresh air and a very bright future ahead. CJ has almost 370,000 Facebook followers, over 100 million YouTube views, and at the beginning of last week, he had over 130,000 Twitter followers. Crazy week on Twitter for CJ. That's kind of why we have him on our show right now to explain. So I will turn it over to CJ, let him introduce himself a little more, and kind of explain what happened with his Twitter account this week.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, Tyler and Dylan, I want to thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today. And yeah, you know, it was, like you said, it's certainly been a crazy week. You know, I kind of live on Twitter. Twitter is one of my favorite apps by far. But earlier this week, I got a notification, a little error message from Twitter that said I was under the age of 13. Now, that's pretty crazy to me because I was like, I'm definitely not 13.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure. You know, I don't really want to live back to those days when I was 13. It was an awkward moment as far as puberty goes when I was 13. But we've come a long way since then. I don't want to. I'm good. But no, it was incredibly weird. I was like, all right, I'm verifiably 15. You know, I had spoken with Jack before. Pretty sure he knew I was 15. And so I was like, all right, this is pretty weird. And so, you know.
Real quick. You said spoken with Jack. Jack as in Twitter Jack?
Yeah, Twitter Jack.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'd spoken with Jack before. We had had conversations. So I was like, okay. So first and foremost, if you wanted to know my age, all you had to do was like, I don't know, check my website or anything like that. It's
definitely simple Google search.
Yeah, simple Google search. And then, or maybe just ask Jack, how old is CJ, you know? And like, but it was weird. And so after I kind of got off of Twitter, I kind of worked with them to figure out what I needed to do to get my account back up. It took a little bit longer than I thought it would take, but I'm finally back on Twitter. I'm happy to be back. And it's definitely meant a lot to have support from people like you guys, you know, who definitely kept the pressure on Twitter to make this right, to do the right thing. And also the countless people who were also pressuring Twitter to do the same. It definitely made a big difference. Twitter even released a statement about it. It had gotten that much awareness. And wow. they realized that they can't do this anymore. They can't,
that's awesome.
You know, discriminate against people who have different political beliefs or who may not have the beliefs that they do. And so I'm definitely glad to see that.
Do you think it was like just one random employee that kind of maybe had a vendetta out for you? Kind of like the one against Trump who deleted his account for a little while?
It's crazy, you know. I hope it was an error. You know, I've seen one tweet that I found yesterday on Twitter. Someone was talking about how they were proud that Twitter had deleted me because I was some bigot and all this stuff, and they had reported my account countless times and things like that. You know, there are definitely liberals who will report your account just because you say something that hurts their feelings, right? And so there definitely needs to be a process in place for Twitter to weed those out and to ensure they're not just deleting accounts because someone said that someone was being quote-unquote abusive or, you know.
They could gang up on you in masses too, you know, and report you. Just because there's a lot of reports doesn't mean it's hate speech necessarily or they're offensive tweets. They're good
at doing
that. It
could just be something that offended a lot of people. And that, you know, and in 2018, when everyone's offended about everything, then honestly, that's very easy to do. So, yeah.
Hate speech is subjective. It's really subjective.
It is subjective these days.
What offends you
might
not offend me. And someone's going to be offended by anything out there. So,
everything.
It's very subjective.
So, real quick, taking a step back. So, you wake up, you get on Twitter, you get this message. Did your heart just sink? I mean, you have alternate platforms, your Facebook page is huge. But still, you had 130,000 followers. That's a huge platform. that's just gone. Did your heart just drop? And what did you do after that? Who was the first person you contacted at Twitter?
It was wild. So I my account gets deleted. I look at it. I'm like, I'm just in disbelief. I'm like, there's no way that this just happened. I was like,
dude, I know how that feels, man.
Yeah, like you hear all the horror stories, and you're like, okay, this is kind of weird. I don't know why Twitter would.
This is it. It's happening.
Yeah, but then it happens to you, and you're like, oh my god, this is actually like legit. Like they do this or this. You know, like I understand like what it's like to kind of have that feeling of like, oh my god. And especially with me, like I'm not only like, you know, it like use my Twitter for politics. Like I just genuinely like Twitter. I love the memes. I love the funny tweets. It occupies a huge chunk of my life, right? And so, you know, not having Twitter, you know, and not being able to get all the dankest memes on the World Wide Web was crippling. It was crippling. I remember just walking around the house pacing, listening to Migos. like I was like, I should be doing something. And honestly, I had never really thought about the entire like phone addiction type thing or social media addiction until like the last few days, but it is real.
It's real, man.
It is real.
Oh, it is real. Well,
you sent me that screenshot and the verbiage they used was your account's been locked and is going to be removed.
Yeah
that was
so
like,
I thought it was,
you know, the death blow.
Permanent. I was like, oh god,
that was scary.
Oh god,
I was scared for you, man.
I know.
Dylan sent me that screenshot and I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe they were doing that. Well, and like you said, you hear the horror stories, and there's people that message us every single day. CG, I'm sure you get them too. It's like, hey, they locked my account. Here's what I said, and then they compare it to a screenshot with something that a verified liberal account said. Like recently with the Korea summit, there were some very, very, very hateful messages out there, and nobody got banned for that stuff. You know.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that there's much work to be done in Silicon Valley to ensure that they rebuild the trust they need to with conservatives online. Because at the end of the day, you know, we love the platform. We love Twitter. We want Twitter to thrive and to succeed, but we also don't want to be targeted because of our beliefs, right? And so I think at the end of the day, it will take Twitter reaching out to folks like you guys, to folks like myself, to folks like, you know, the Candace Owens and Charlie Kirks and all those big people in the movement. And a little bit they've already done, I've seen. But, like, doing that more so and really making sure that the decisions they make don't negatively impact one group of people over the other. And sometimes they just happen to fall across philosophical or, you know, ideological lines, which is concerning, right? You know, you see what you just mentioned, right? You have people who tweet, you know, mild things, and then you have people who tweet deplorable, hateful, which verge on death threats about the president, right? And so, you know, it's like there has to be some sort of accountability and fairness and objectivity in the process, no doubt.
Yeah, the bias and the double standard is very noticeable, and it always errs towards the edge of conservatives. It's insane. There's just numerous examples, and they're not hard to find.
Do you think the argument here is, and we've all heard it, the argument that Twitter, Facebook, all these social media platforms, they're private companies. Should they have the right to be able to essentially do whatever they want and censor people, censor whoever they want, since they're private companies? Should they be able to do that?
Legally, yes, they have the right. I don't think you can dispute that much, but I think what we can do is realize that and make clear to them that it's not in their best interest for them to do that, right? They're private companies, you just mentioned, right? So they have to focus about their profit, their bottom line. And if they want to discriminate against 50% of the country, then we should let them know that that's not going to go by without a fight. And that we should definitely fight them at every turn to do so. And I think they've realized that. And I think that's why you see people like Twitter and Mark Zuckerberg making an effort to reach out to conservatives and let them know, hey, you know, we want to hear from you. You know, some of it, you know, from Facebook's side, you know, I see them doing a lot of lip service, not necessarily doing anything actionable. Because I get stories all the time of people who have like these widely popular Facebook pages that have like 200,000, 300,000 followers, and then their post reach is like 1,000, 2,000 people sometimes. And that's absurd.
That just happened to Dank Memes or Dank Trump Memes.
Yeah, and that's absurd. I think I got an email from them, actually. The account.
Dude, they messaged me too.
Yeah. And so, like, stuff like that, like, that's the thing that people need to be talking about. And in a lot of ways, too, you know, maybe it's not intentional, but a lot of it, it falls across. There is a pattern, right? You see all these conservative mm-hmm. accounts that get affected. You don't hear this from liberal accounts. You're not hearing this from people who have, you know, popular liberal meme accounts, right? Even though liberals can't really meme, but
you remember the purge, the Twitter purge? You remember the Twitter purge from a few months ago?
Yeah. And
or
that
it might have been 6 months ago. It was all conservatives. There was no liberals getting their accounts purged.
Yeah, there was no liberals saying anything about that. And so even if it's not intentional, and I would hope that it isn't, there is a pattern, and they need to make sure that pattern ceases to exist.
Exactly. And back to the point of Twitter being a private company and being able to do this to whoever they want, a judge recently threw a wrench into that whole argument because she declared that Trump can't block anybody because his tweets are public account. It's a public document, essentially. So is Twitter now a public forum? Is it not a private company because of that? So there's a big debate to be had.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be, I think, a lot of catching up that the law is going to have to do to a lot of this, right? You know, like when our founding fathers were sitting around the table debating what the First Amendment would mean, they weren't thinking about tweets and they weren't thinking about periscopes or anything like that. Yeah. And so, you know,
periscopes.
They've had incredible foresight nonetheless, but they weren't thinking about that. And so I think, you know, there definitely is going to be a lot of catching up that the law is going to have to do with a lot of this. And that's going to be interesting to see because, like I said, you know, living without Twitter for even just the 24 hours that I had to is weird, right? And so it just speaks to how indispensable a lot of these social media platforms are to people's daily lives, from Facebook to Instagram to Twitter. And it really shows that it is a kind of a fundamental component of the day-to-day life of many people, not only here in America, but across the world. So I definitely think it is becoming a public forum. The question is, how does the law adjust to adapt to that definition, really?
Exactly. Well, and you are a great example of, because you came into the spotlight because of social media. I want to say it was a video 3 years ago that you made on YouTube that kind of went viral and kind of gave you this platform. Is that right?
Yeah, that is true.
And that was, you were criticizing Barack Obama's, I think that was the video. I remember seeing it then too.
Yeah. And so that just really goes to show that, you know, in this day and age that, you know, a long, long time ago, I remember when I first got interested in politics, I was in like the second grade and I wanted to learn everything about politics. I wanted to know who the biggest players were, who were the people that I wanted to be like, who were the people that I should look up to. And, you know, a lot of these people had gone through the traditional routes to get to where they were, right? They had gone to college. They had done all these random jobs at these random conservative publications. They had, you know, really paid their dues in a lot of ways, right? In the traditional sense of the word. But like now we live in a world where it's like people don't really care about any of that, right? Like people just want you to be authentic and they want you to just be forthright with them about how you feel and what you believe. And I think that just goes to show that in the world of social media, like think about all the people that we would not even know if social media didn't exist. Like we wouldn't have the Candace Owens's, the Tommy Lahrens, we wouldn't have you guys, we wouldn't have so many people who have really come onto the scene. All because of social media and who have become some of the most influential voices and ambassadors for conservatism and what we stand for in a very, very long time. And that goes from people from Mike Cernovich, Jordan Peterson. There's so many people who have just come out of nowhere.
Jordan Peterson, that's such a great example, man. Jordan Peterson, I love that guy.
Yeah. And like in any traditional way, if you know, 10 years ago, like he would not be the cultural force that he is. But because of social media, he's become that force, which is, I think, formidable.
That you made such a great point. I mean, you're going through all these people and how they came to the spotlight, and it's almost predominantly conservatives that have had to use social media to get that voice because they're not being represented in the mainstream media.
Yes, I mean, social media has changed the game.
Changed it completely. And well, Trump used it to his advantage completely. He's proof. He's the biggest example of that.
You know, and it's interesting. Someone, to your point that you made about how Trump used social media to his advantage, you kind of see that from other people who don't really support the president. And someone tweeted something today that I found really, really interesting. They said never Trump was really not really something that exist in the real world. It's not reality. What it is, it's a social media phenomenon. There's so many people who like to attack the president on Twitter for clout, and they do so to get a few pats on the backs from people who agree with them.
They get some attention because they've been neglected. Yes. Yeah. Attention. Yeah, but, that's all it is.
Yeah, but those never Trumpers, they lose their elections. You look at what happened in South Carolina recently with Congressman Mark Sanford. This is a guy who was governor of the state before he cheated on his wife and then got pushed out of office. But that's another story for another time. But anyway, so he goes to Congress. He attacks the president. He's a member of our party. He attacks the president, all of that. But then, you know, and of course Twitter loves him for it. You have, you know, the Ben Shapiros of Twitter. You have, you know, all those Eric Erickson's and whatnot who love Republicans like Mark Sanford. But at the ballot box, he was defeated. And it's really because that, you know, it's just they don't have the power that MAGA has and that our movement has on social media. You know, you can't go on CNN or be a host on CNN or anything like that and push the conservative narrative without considerable blowback. But you can do that. Yeah. You can push the liberal narrative without any shadow of a doubt. I've watched CNN hosts do that and be just like, you can see the disdain in their face when they talk about this president, which is just concerning to me.
Well, yeah, did you see Chris, Cuomo, whatever, his face talking to Rodman? Dude,
oh, that was amazing.
It looked painful.
That was amazing.
It's painful.
And it's so bad because it's like they want to be these dealers of truth and objectivity, but it's like you look at them as they just talk to people who disagree with them, and you see the disdain and elitism in their face. And you're reminded of so many things that are wrong with journalism in 2018, but you're also reminded of the reasons we won in 2016, and you're reminded of the fact that we're going to win again in 2020. So, you know, a lot of ways it's concerning, but then it's relieving because we have a little bit more time and power and even more years after that.
Absolutely, man. And they're just outdoing their own BS, which makes it easier for, you know, the other people who don't pay attention to see through it. So more and more people, especially the people on the fence, are getting pushed to the right because they're getting so crazy about things and becoming so unhinged towards the cliff of insanity, actually.
Well, this North Korea summit was a perfect example of that, the disdain from the leftist media. It was absolutely disgusting seeing how they reacted to this monumental event in our history. What happened with Trump and Kim Jong-un is amazing. We should all be celebrating, on the left, on the right, liberal, conservative, whatever. Everyone should be celebrating.
Dude, you don't even have to be a Trump supporter to like be pleased with what's happening. You just have to be a reasonable human being.
They're not shooting rockets anymore. They're not shooting rockets. They're not threatening destruction.
Well, they blew
to
up their
America.
Main nuclear missile testing site. They gave back 3 hostages for nothing. We didn't have to bow to him and give him $150 billion like Obama did with Iran.
They're saying like he lost the deal. We didn't have to trade prisoners of ours for just one of ours, you know? And like, yeah, I remember when, yeah, we traded 5 prisoners for Bo Bergdahl. You know, that was the feckless leadership that Barack Obama had on the world stage. Anyone to criticize Donald Trump for sitting down with Kim Jong-un and doing what no other president in modern history has been able to do, bring him to the deal table, and then also get him to make real concessions? I don't think that's a loss. I think that's a clear victory, not only for the, you know, for his interest in the region, you know, from our allies there, you know, from South Korea to Japan, but also for the American people. This is a president who has done far more than President Obama did to deserve a world Nobel Peace Prize, and I think
basically in a few hours,
in a few hours, meeting. Right? And you know, and everyone was questioning him, you know, when he first began engaging in North Korea. How dare you call Kim Jong-un little rocket man? How dare you say your button is bigger than his button and all these things? And then, you know, the president's like, okay, doubt me if you want, but let me show you how this is going to work. And he did that.
It all led to where we are now. And people don't understand how big this is towards people don't understand how big this is towards like world peace and how much is on the line here. If you look at it, Seoul in South Korea has a population of over 10 million people and is 35 miles away from North Korea, the border. And they have nukes that can easily hit there. So, I mean, people just don't understand the magnitude and the scale of this and how historic this is and how much is on the line. One nuke could wipe out 10 million people.
They don't care, though. They don't care. They would rather be able to attack this president than commend him for protecting our allies in that region, and also the considerable amount of Americans that we have there. You know, someone told me or read somewhere that we have like 235,000 Americans in South Korea. Like, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
And so it's like, you want to talk about, you know, this president, caving to a North Korean dictator. Imagine all the things that Kim Jong-un has had to do. He kind of talked about it at the summit. He was like, you know, there has been so many prejudices and past beef that we've had to overcome to get to this point here today. And that's a big deal. He really had to. He had to make concessions and disappoint a lot of people who probably served his father, you know, in North Korea, who were like, what are you doing, Kim Jong-un? You know, and this is a man who cares a lot about holding on to power, too. So I think the fact that President Trump was such a formidable opponent in Kim Jong-un's eyes that he had to make those concessions, it just speaks to the strength of this president.
For sure. Absolutely. I would love to hear more from Kim Jong-un in North Korea as to how they dealt with past administrations, Obama, Bush, Clinton, because Trump, Hannity tried to go into it with Trump, but Trump kind of said, you know, I don't want that to come from my mouth. I want North Korea and Kim Jong-un to talk about that. So I'm very interested to see as to why. Yeah, I think you're right. Trump is a formidable opponent. It's the right time for them to do it, right person to do it with. You know, why didn't they choose to do it then? So I would love to hear more on that from them.
For sure. And I think it speaks to the why differences that this president has from every other president that has preceded him, from Democrats to Republicans. You see President Barack Obama, and that's the thing that really gets me, right? You know, you have the media, you have the left, they embrace the Iran deal. And it was a weak deal, right? We gave them billions of dollars.
It was the worst deal.
Yeah.
Like, tell me a worse deal than that one.
The worst.
The worst. It wasn't a worse one.
It was one of the worst. Yeah, maybe the very worst. And, like, the thing is, like, Iran is a state sponsor of terrorism. We gave them billions of dollars to a state sponsor of terrorism. And they made
chant death to America in public.
Yeah. Yeah. They chant death to America on their streets. The Supreme Leader constantly and consistently taunts us, even after we inked the deal. They continue to.
Dude, after we ended it, they burned our flag. Their government officials burned the American flag.
And then we just say, oh, it's okay. Diplomacy, you know, it's fine. We got what we wanted. No, we didn't. We did not get what we wanted. We're sitting here watching these people continue to do what they did before. And, you know, and what's really intriguing to me is that you see all these people who are tearing down the president right now because we haven't inked out the details as far as verifiability goes with what North Korea is doing. What was the terms of verifiability in the Iran deal? There were none.
Self-inspection.
That's why we pulled out. And so it's like, you know, you embrace the Iran deal. You get salty when Donald Trump says, I'm sorry, we're done here. Rips the Iran deal to shreds, and you get mad at him for doing that. But then when the president starts off where the Iran deal ended, then you're angry at him. It's hypocrisy.
Dude, yeah, they're forced to defend this. Democrats are forced to defend this or their positions, because they will cease to exist as a party anymore. And liberal philosophy will cease to exist. And all these people's realities and false illusions they've created for so long will be shattered. And that is just way too much. That's too big of a pill to swallow. Way too big of a red pill.
For sure. And, you know, it's interesting. Like, it's wild that they have been so willing to put their party over country. And it just speaks to the fact that Democrats would rather see America fail than Americans win on Donald Trump's watch, which is appalling.
100%. They're mad because Kim Jong-un didn't nuke anybody to make, you know, Trump look bad. Like, that's their position, a lot of them. Even though they won't say it out loud.
They would have loved for him to do that. Regardless of how many lives were lost, they would have realized that it was a political position that they could have staked out, not only in the midterms, but in the 2020 presidential election, that would have been beneficial to them. They don't care. They really don't. They don't want to see America win. They want to see
It's a catch-22 from the liberal standpoint. You know, Trump has this meeting. Oh, he didn't do enough. Trump goes to war with him. Now he's a bloodthirsty warmonger.
Yep. It's a
catch-22 no matter what.
Right. And that's exactly why that I'm glad that our president is a politician, because maybe if he was a politician, he'd be worried about what the left was saying, right? He would take it into consideration that, oh my God, what are the political optics of this? Donald Trump doesn't care about that. Donald Trump's a businessman. He's looking for the best deal for the American people to ensure that he can deliver the goods. Yeah.
Yeah, he knows what money is, and he knows how to make more of it. He's a smart man. But dude, think if this was Obama. They would have already had a national holiday. They'd already be giving him a second Nobel Peace Prize, and he would already be having his face carved in. He'd already be having his face carved in Mount Rushmore right now as we speak. I'm serious.
So, I want to take a step back from politics here, and I'm sure most of our listeners know who you are, CJ, because they're on Twitter. And but for anyone that doesn't know, listening to CJ talk, this guy, he's 15, and I mean he's more knowledgeable and more politically savvy than most people I know. That are
than
older
me,
than me,
for sure.
That,
it's crazy. Oh,
than me too. It's crazy. But so I guess I would like to know more into how you got to where you are. What made you so interested in politics? Is your family, are they Democrat, Republican? How did your parents, what do they think about your current platform? You're in high school. What do your friends think? You know, do you own your teachers? Do you get into arguments with your teachers? That's the kind of stuff that I want to hear about.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's been really, really fun. You know, for me, it all started off in the second grade. It was the 2008 election, and we had an assignment. We were given a mock election, right? And so we had to do what every other American at that time was doing. We had to research the candidates and figure out who we were going to vote for. Now, that's a pretty big task for a second grader. And I remember, you know, watching the debates and doing all of that and kind of figuring out, wow, this is kind of interesting, like the drama of it all. It was kind of like watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians, except it was on CNN. And then it was like, okay, I kind of dig this. And, you know, it felt important. It felt meaningful what was happening on that stage, the debate that they were having. And I also remember at the end of that week, because it was a week-long assignment, I casted my ballot for John McCain. I since regret that vote, but I only had two choices.
How could you?
Yeah, I only had two choices. So, and there was no third-party candidate that I know of, or at least was on the ballot. So I had to make tough choices in second grade.
Did anybody in second grade have critical? Did anybody in second grade have critical thinking skills beyond, you know, being a single issue voter? Even like why would you even give that assignment
to
second graders?
Trust me, it's ridiculous. Second grade, if Michelle Obama had been forthright about what she had planned to do with our school lunches, Barack Obama would have lost that election in a landslide. Unfortunately, she didn't let us know, and I think Obama did win our election. I think he did. It was unfortunate, but
lunches. That would have been the biggest issue in second grade.
It would have been the biggest issue, and like everyone after
we're getting pizza every day.
Like, yeah, yeah. Everyone after second grade, they were like, oh my God, what happened to ice cream? What happened to, you know, all of our desserts? I'm like, Michelle Obama happened.
Yeah. And a second grader.
I was in like third grade, and so I had to kind of figure out what was happening politically. Like, I would read the newspaper in third grade. It was so weird. I was a weird kid. Wow. But it was weird because I was like, I wasn't like weird nerdy, but I was like obsessed with politics. It was like my Pokemon. Like, it, well, so, you know, like kids were obsessed with Pokemon.
Collector's
I was obsessed
cards
with politics. It was my thing.
So are your parents obsessed with politics?
No, they're like they watch the news. They watch the news like all the time or whatever. But they're not like politically involved. They're not politically active. They've never worked on a campaign or anything like that. But yeah, they stay up to date with the news. But beyond that, that's really all they do. And so it's kind of been a weird path for me to take, and especially considering they're Democrats too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, oh my God, what did we do wrong with our son? And so I get that.
So what are they – do you guys ever get into arguments? Like, what do your parents think about you being conservative and a very loud voice?
Yeah, you know, a lot of it's interesting. You know, it definitely makes for some interesting dinner time discussion. No doubt, you know, sometimes they'll attack the president and I'll be like, you really just don't know what you're talking about. And it's so funny. And it's like a part of me, like, I think I say that in my head, but I accidentally say it out loud that you don't know what you're talking about. And then I feel a little bit sorry. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's tough because it's like, I get it. Y'all watch CNN all the time. That's perfectly okay. But guys, like, think about what they're not telling you. Black unemployment, lowest rate that it's ever been in our nation's history. So is Hispanic unemployment. Look at the economy. Look how big it's growing. Look at the constant job growth. Look at all of that. You know, sure, that's not highlighted on CNN every day, but it's happening. And that's what's meaningful.
Yeah, well, dude, you can lead a horse to water, you know, but
you can't make him drink. That's incredible.
Can't make him drink, yeah. So yeah, what about at school? You're a junior, right? And you're 15?
Yeah, I'll be a junior this year. I'll be 16.
You'll be a junior this year. Okay. Did you skip a grade or something?
No, I'll be 6. My birthday's kind of like late, so yeah.
Okay.
Dude, you can't even drive yet. That's insane.
It's inconvenient. That's insane. It's really inconvenient. People invite me to things, and they're like, oh, like, do it at this time. And they invite me the day of, and I'm like, do you realize that I can't drive? Like.
So what do your friends think about your platform And do they talk to you about it? Are they conservative as well? What do your teachers think?
Yeah, so it's interesting. So a lot of my friends, I think, you know, a lot of people would think that they would be kind of off-put by it, you know, like it would kind of have that nerdy vibe. But a lot of my friends kind of think that it's kind of cool, you know, that I'm out here doing stuff like that, making a difference, being vocal about what I believe.
Appearing on Fox News, I mean.
yeah, that's what they were most concerned about. They were like, you were on Fox News? And I was like, yeah. And then they were like, ever since then, they've been sold. I think they only like the TV part of it, though.
You're on TV, you're famous now, bro.
Yeah, I was like, I know, they always ask for shout-outs and everything. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. But I was like, the only people that get shout-outs on my Twitter are Chick-fil-A and amazing other people.
What was that thing you told us before the podcast?
Oh, yeah, guys. Being a bigot. I went to Chick-fil-A earlier today. So as you guys may know, to everyone who's listening, apparently if you eat at Chick-fil-A now, you are a bigot. Like, you hate the gays, all of them, every single one of them. And so that's news to me because I eat Chick-fil-A all the time, and I couldn't care less about what gay people are doing. So I was like, okay, you know, if I'm going to be a bigot, it's fine. The chicken sandwiches, the waffle fries, it all makes up for this moment.
What was that one-liner you said?
Yeah, I said being a bigot never tasted so good. It never tasted so good. It tastes incredible.
It is truly the best.
It was incredibly nourishing.
So when you're in class and you hear, I mean, do you have liberal teachers? Do you ever correct them in the middle of class?
Going back and forth with them is always really, really fun. What I really like is going back and forth with liberal students because you realize like how flawed the liberal narrative is when you're actually like, when people are actually forced to defend it. You see how predicated it is upon emotion and all of these things. Like, I will literally, like, just play devil's advocate sometimes. Like, I might not even care about the issue they're talking about. But I'm like, why do you believe what you believe? And they're like, because it's right. And I'm like, why is it right? Because it feels like it is. And I'm like,
usually you can get them on the first why, but you get them three whys deep and they have no idea anymore.
They have no clue why they believe what they do. I was in chemistry one day and I don't even know how politics even came up, but it's weird. But we were in chemistry, and some girl calls me a bigot, and I'm like, how am I a bigot? And then she's like, you just are. It's what you believe. And I'm like, what's a bigot? And then she was like, you? And I'm like, what's a bigot? Can you please define it for me? And she's like, and then she stopped talking. I was like, yeah, I appreciate your time. I was like, I appreciate your time. But nevertheless, you know, and that's just the sort of thing that I find really intriguing. Most kids at school, you know, they're pretty cool about it. But, you know, there are those liberal kids who kind of try to come for you all at times. But, you know, like I always say, you know, when the facts are on your side, the facts are on your side. And so there it is.
There it is.
Yeah, dude. And by standing up and speaking up for yourself, which a lot of people are really scared to do and won't do, you're sharpening your skills and getting better, you know, at debating.
Yeah, and that's something I always tell kids who, like, DM me or message me on Instagram. They're like, so CJ, I live in a liberal place, I go to a liberal school, and I'm surrounded by kids who don't think like me. And what do I do? Like, I'm conservative. How do I speak up? How do I speak out? How do I make a difference? And I'm like, okay, first and foremost, realize that you may think that you're alone. You're probably not. You're probably not. There are just kids around you who aren't as outspoken as you are, who aren't as willing to step into the fray as you are. But guess what? You speaking up and voicing your opinion can act as a catalyst for all of them to do the same. And so, you know, I've noticed that in classes. Like, I've been in class arguing with some liberal student, especially in my social studies classes, because we get into those debates a lot. And I'm going back and forth with the other student. There's this one girl that comes to mind. It happens almost every day. But, you know, we would go back and forth. And then after the bell would ring, people would, like, come up to me and they'd be like, CJ, she is totally stupid. I'm like, I know. I agree. Thanks. and it's like, you know, they're silent about it, but at the same time, you're like, they're shaking their head. You know, they understand where you're coming from. They agree with you. They're just not as ballsy as you are sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of conservatives tend to be mild-mannered people who are anti-confrontational, and the left seems to be really confrontational because they go off emotions rather than facts.
Yeah. It's very easy to call someone a racist, but it's not very easy to explain why cutting regulations will unleash job growth and wage growth and all of those things.
It's easy to raise your voice and call names and throw insults.
Yeah, you're a racist! Just scream it as loud as you can. As loud as you can. It always works. Always works.
Yeah, that was actually... You just covered two of the questions that people asked today. that had for you, they had for you. There was a mom that messaged and said something about her middle school kid is faced with an avalanche of negativity because she's a free-thinking conservative, and her teachers are not like her. Her teacher told her class that they should all be against the Second Amendment. This is a teacher saying this to a sixth grade class. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's incredibly, incredibly crazy. And that's the biggest thing where you need those outspoken students who will be like, why do you believe what you believe? And here's why I believe the Second Amendment.
And record it when you do it. Get your phones out. Record this stuff.
Yeah, you will make that teacher famous, undoubtedly. She will be famous by the end of the day. But, and people like me, you guys, we'll make sure of it. And, like, you know, things like that. Like, that's the thing. We need students in classrooms who are willing to speak up and speak out because you don't want that teacher to just be able to hate on the Second Amendment, which is fundamental for ensuring that America remains the freedom-loving democracy that it is forever and always. But, you know, because we can't allow those beliefs to not go without any confrontation or to not be addressed. And so when you have students who realize and understand what's right and who believe in conservative beliefs and your teacher's out there spouting liberal rhetoric, check her on her facts. You know, don't be afraid to stand up to her because at the end of the day, just trust me, not only will you have allies in that classroom, but you'll have allies across the country.
Mm-hmm. Be a leader and speak up. Be a leader and speak up for what is right. Absolutely.
And that's really alluring to a lot of students too. Like, you know, I tell people all the time, like, not everyone's meant to be a leader. Like, and it's weird because everyone's like, always be a leader, or like they tell their children that. Not everyone's meant to be a leader, like, to be quite frank. And at the end of the day, there are people who will follow you and be attracted to you because you are the leader that they can't necessarily be. And that's something too to think about. You know, like, you know, there's so many weird things that people do in high school and middle school for clout and recognition and popularity. But at the end of the day, like, if you actually stand up for what you believe in and you make an impact on someone who may not be as courageous and brave as you are, then that goes a whole lot longer. No one's really going to care about who they jeweled in the bathroom with, which, and for those of you who don't know what jeweling is, it's vaping.
Jewels. I got the skins on them now and everything. I've seen them.
I know. There's this one where it's a Playboy. I'm talking too much about this, but anyway. Yeah. Okay. But no, it's, but seriously though, like, no one's really going to be thinking about that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, but they will be thinking about the person who was vocal about what they believed and never gave up and forfeited what they believed just to be.
Absolutely. Just be a good person. Be respectful. Be someone that other people can look up to. Maybe there's only, you know, maybe there's just one person looks up to you. That's great, man. Everyone should have one person to look up to.
Made an impact. You've made an impact.
Let's get to a few more questions here before we get to the game. Time has been flying by. From at @xwordmark, where do you see yourself in 10 years and 20 years?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. 10 years from now, I'll be 25.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. It's weird. It's weird when I think about this. Like, sometimes I'll be just be sitting around. I'm like, I want to do this. And then I'm like, I'm not even 18. And it's like, you know, it's so weird sometimes planning for the future because it's like, I'm still 15. But, you know, 10 years from now, I'll be 25, hopefully graduating law school. You know, my goal has always been to kind of one day run for Congress and be like the youngest congressman in the United States.
You already have my endorsement.
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And, you know, that's always been a weird goal for me because I see so many career politicians who go to Washington who have all this quote-unquote experience but continuously put the generation of young Americans like myself in jeopardy. And those people don't belong in office. They run on one thing and do a completely different thing when they are there. And so I think there's definitely a need for more young conservatives in office who aren't afraid to fight, aren't afraid to fight on principle. And then 20 years from now, I'll be 35? Yeah, 35? CJ 2040, maybe. Who knows? I don't know. I really... Whatever God's plan is, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
Amen.
Well, you definitely have a bright future, that's for sure. And I don't think your goals are out of reach at all. So,
thank you.
Another question from @MidnightMary001. Do you think the left is worried that you will turn the next generation of voters into Republicans?
Well, that's the goal. That's the goal every single day, is to expose more people to thoughts that they weren't previously exposed to. And I think the more people that we have who are thinking freely, the more that the left is losing sleep at night. You see that from their reactions to people like Kanye West, the reactions to people like Candace Owens. They're concerned because when people start thinking for themselves and are refusing to be told what to believe, what to say, what to be offended by, and what to feel, then the left loses its grip. They lose their power. They lose their influence. And so I think they, you know, what's more scary to a leftist than a young black conservative? You know, I'm not supposed to be any. I'm not supposed
that.
To be.
That is kryptonite, man. That is kryptonite.
I'm young. I'm black. I'm not supposed to be conservative. I'm supposed to hate you guys. I'm supposed to call you guys racist, yeah. bigots, white supremacists. Oh, so many names that I can't even keep track of. Honestly, I'll need like a PDF document of all the names I'm supposed to call these people.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You know, that's what I'm supposed to do because of the color of my skin and the age that I am. And, you know, I refuse to believe that. And so are millions of other young people. As well. And, you know, I've heard many statistics about Generation Z. You know, a lot of people just automatically think, okay, young people are just gonna be overwhelmingly liberal. And that may have been true to a degree with millennials for sure. We've seen that on our college campuses. But the research for Generation Z is actually really interesting. So Generation Z is predicted to be one of the most conservative generations since World War II. And a lot of that is because of our exposure to free market principles and things like that, which has definitely created within my generation a strong affection for things like the free market and other things related to it, a strong national security. And other just fundamental principles. We're not the snowflakes that our predecessors were.
Absolutely not. Hey, isn't that a crazy concept? You know, thinking with your brain instead of your skin color?
No, I know, right?
So and, crazy, right?
And it's so wild because these are the same people who love to talk about Martin Luther King Jr., but like, did you ever listen to the man? Like, this man said, let us not be judged by the content, the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. And I think that's a big deal. Like, we have so many people who just hate white people to hate white people because it's some trend. And then you have people who are like, oh, because I'm black, I'm a Democrat. Why? Yeah. Like, what's the point? What have Democrats done for our community other than enslave us, segregate us, and then, you know, sort of put us in jail when it came to the 90s crime bill under Bill Clinton? Like, I'm sorry, they haven't done much for us, and they continue to feed us table scraps and then continue to claim they care for us. And that's just not true. But look at what Republicans have done. You know, everything from, you know, abolishing slavery to supporting the Civil Rights Act of 1964, all the way to here and now. Yeah, I mentioned earlier, we have the lowest black unemployment rate in our nation's history. You know, black communities are thriving across this country like never before. And I think that's really impactful. Just look at what's happening as far as relates to Kanye. And I think that's definitely going to pay some real big dividends when it comes to 2020, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was that phrase, it's okay to be white, which had liberals pulling their hair out. But there's also a phrase, it's okay to be a black conservative.
Yeah. You know, they were mad when Chance the Rapper tweeted, you don't have to be Democrat just because you're black. They were mad about that. And I'm like,
super mad.
That's the most tolerant like statement you could make. And then they reacted by being intolerant.
He caved under it and he revoked his statement. He's like, I'm sorry.
That is also absurd. That is also absurd. And that goes back to another entirely different topic about the mob mentality that we're seeing right now, right? You know, you see it from, we were talking about Chick-fil-A earlier. Jack Dorsey, you know, posted that he just ordered some Chick-fil-A. On his Twitter, and then this quote-unquote journalist, Soledad O'Brien, says, wow, this is a weird thing to be eating during Pride Month, and then he apologizes for it.
Yeah, because she says because of their background. What background is that? Christianity?
Christian background?
Yes.
Christian background?
Exactly.
And so that's the sort of thing that is just, like, it's mind-blowing. And to see people giving into that, it only furthers what they've done.
And their boycotts don't work anyways because they have no money to spend.
They don't. They're too busy living in their parents' basement anyway, so.
Pretty much.
Well, we could probably go on for hours, I think. We might have to have you on a second time here very soon. But we should move on to our initials game. This is Initials, the best game on the internet's most entertaining. Today we got Dylan and CJ Pearson. Dylan is the career wins champion. He's got 3 career wins. Deve has 1. Unfortunately, he is not here with us today to play. CJ, you have a chance to make history today. You have a chance to make history. Be the first guest to ever win. So before I get into the game, I would just like to say to everyone listening that if you enjoy our podcast, head over to www.patreon.com/EFRL. If you'd like to donate, that money helps us a lot with our monthly fees and helps us fund our book that should be coming out here in a couple months. We'd like to get it out before midterms. So today's game, the initials are you ready? BC, Bravo Charlie. All right, BC. And if anyone that has not watched this game before, it's very simple. We have 9 items, person, place, or thing. I'm going to give 5 clues to each item, and the first person to come in and say, I'd like to solve, gets to answer the question. If they answer it right, they get a point. We move on to the next item. If they get it wrong, they're out for that item, and the other person gets to guess. Person with the most points at the end wins. So we'll jump right in. Item number one, clue number one. Identified as a Democrat before 1981 and as an independent from 1999 to 2014. Clue number two. Received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President George Bush in 2008. Item number three. Withdrew from the Republican primaries on March 2nd, 2016. Clue number four. He is now the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
I'd like to solve. CJ.
This one's easy.
Ben Carson.
Ben Carson is right. CJ is on the board.
Wow. Dang it.
Item number two. Clue number one. Fictional character used in ad campaigns for food and recipes. Clue number two. Developed in Minneapolis in 1921.
I'd like to solve.
CJ.
Pillsbury Doughboy?
No, that is wrong.
Ooh, nice. I'm going to hear out these clues.
Clue number three. Was once the most recognized woman in the U.S., even though she's a fictional character. Clue number four. Most popular products include cakes and brownies.
I'd like to solve.
Dylan.
It is Betty Crocker.
Betty Crocker is correct.
Oh, I was going to get that wrong with my second guess. I was going to say Little Debbie.
It's got to be the initials.
Initials, BC, yeah. BC.
Oh, Robert yeah, Trump. It is. Oh,
yep. God. Oh, rookie mistake. We got rookie a newbie mistake.
Right. Tied 1-1, 7 left. Item number 3, clue number 1. Born in 1975 in Philadelphia and raised Catholic. Clue number 2. Attended DNC events in 2016. Clue number 3. Acted in the movie Wedding Crashers. Clue number 4. Played Chris Kyle in the movie American Sniper.
Oh, I'd like to solve.
Dylan.
It's Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper is right. Dylan 2, CJ 1. Item number 4. Number 1. Clue number 1. Geographical location.
Clue. I'd like to solve.
Dylan.
British Columbia.
British Columbia is right.
Yes.
Dylan, that was my... not going easy. It's 3-1.
Take no breaks.
All right, this one's a tough one. If you guys get this, I'll be shocked. This is, maybe I'm wrong. Item number 5, clue number 1. Has appeared on InfoWars. Clue number 2. Described himself as a free market libertarian capitalist. Clue number 3. Is a lead singer of a band. Clue number 4. This band is a 90s grunge band. Clue number 5. Smashing Pumpkins lead singer.
Oh, I don't remember his name.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Answer is Billy Corgan.
Oh, I have no clue that.
He's a pretty interesting guy. First, I'm a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan. But second, he's very, very politically outspoken. He's pretty interesting to hear. So I highly recommend anyone to go listen to Billy Corgan speak. Item number 6. Clue number 1. He just said this past week, I think the norms have really changed in terms of what you can do to somebody against their will.
Oh. I'll give this one to CJ.
CJ.
All
right,
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton is right.
All right.
So you item
should,
number,
you
it's
should have
3
seen
to 2.
My face on the camera.
3 to 2. 3 items left. All right, item number 7. Clue number one, historical event. Clue number two, occurred in 1961 after tensions rose after a meeting with President JFK. Clue number three, the Soviets gave U.S., France, and Britain 6 months to leave the western part of this city. Clue number four, resulted in a wall being built through this city. Clue number five, city is in Germany.
Oh, and I that like to wall. It.
CJ.
Is it Berlin conflict?
I'm going to give it to you. It's Berlin crisis, but that I'm giving it to you.
Oh, nice. That was good.
So, all right, it is tied 3-3, two left. These last two are good ones. You guys should both be able to get them pretty easily. Item number eight, clue number one, comedian. Clue number two, loves pudding. Clue number three, is a convicted rapist. Clue number four, had his own show in the 80s that is still playing.
I'd like to solve. I'd like to solve. It's Dylan. Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby is right.
I'm so weak. You know, it's the way that you were going, you were saying rapist, and I was like, is this Bill Clinton again? That's weird.
The stuff he says is pretty comedic, too. So.
All right, this is... It's 4-3. This is game time, CJ. You got to get this one. All right, item number nine. Clue number one, technological device. Clue number two, agencies spend anywhere from $120 to $2,000 on each device. Clue number three, these have saved many officers from false testimony.
I'd like to solve.
Dylan for the win.
It is body cams.
That's right. Dylan is a defending champ again.
Congratulations,
5-3.
Dylan.
Thanks, CJ.
Well,
just a champ, man.
I know.
The best
when
go down like
again,
the rest.
Like the Bill Cosby one, as soon as you said rapist and then TV, and then I was like, okay, it has to be Bill Cosby. But, yeah.
Well, CJ, thanks for coming on our show, and thanks for telling your story about this past week. We'll definitely have to have you on again.
It was great joining you guys.
Yeah, CJ, thanks for coming on, man. You are beyond your years for wisdom. It's crazy, and I'm excited to see what your future holds, man. And, yeah, you'll have to come back on, and we'll stay in touch for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing that book from you guys and all the things that you guys have planned as well.
Awesome.
Right on. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. Before we go ahead and follow us on Instagram. I'm Real Tyler Zed on Instagram and Twitter. Dylan is Educating Liberals on Instagram and Education for Libs on Twitter. And go ahead and follow CJ as well, the CJ Pearson. And I believe that's on all platforms, correct, CJ?
Yeah, on all platforms.
Nice. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will be back on Sunday, hopefully.